Sleep is a biological need for life and health, similar to the need for food. Sleep affects your mental and physical performance, as well as has huge impacts on your long-term health. Most adults need about 7 to 8 hours of good quality sleep per night. But the problem is, most people lose sleep. And this leads us to build up a serious sleep debt that can significantly impact both our mental and physical health. The only way to pay off this debt is to pay attention to your sleep. Willpower alone will not ensure and not keep you safe from the mounting problem of sleep debt. When we are sleepy or when we are fatigued, we have difficulty focusing, frequent blinking, heavy eyelids, eye rubbing, and we're restless and irritable. And we also know that people are more at risk for having car wrecks and having problems operating heavy machinery when we are too tired. But we as a culture undervalue the importance of sleep. We think that sleep is optional, that there is some power in bragging about how we simply do not sleep. The fact of it is, your sleep is truly like a bank account. You pay into it, and it pays you back in longevity and health in your aging years. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Zeke Medina is an adult sleep consultant and pharmacist who coaches clients on how to achieve a productive lifestyle by learning to sleep well first before implementing bigger health changes. He is the co-founder of Live, Love, Sleep Sleep Consulting, where he works with his wife to help families learn the skill of restorative sleep. From the baby that stays up all night crying to the adults with insomnia, Live, Love, Sleep helps to solve sleep issues for all ages. Zeke coaches clients by laying out a detailed and customized plan in phases, as well as providing education on the plan and following up regularly. His plans oftentimes look into both nighttime and daily routines, your diet, your movement, your stress level, your supplements, your medications, as well as your past medical history, as he designs customized sleep plans. Zeke coaches clients all over the world. Currently, he is working in collaboration with companies who want to improve the well-being of their employees by providing seminars and guest appearances on their networking platforms. When he is not coaching clients, he is either out on the softball field with his daughter, Evelyn, or on the soccer field with his son, Leo. If he's free from kids, then he's outside hiking, in the kitchen, fermenting something new, or doing some kind of DIY project with his wife. Dr. Zeke Medina, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Lindsay. How are you?
Oh, I am doing so well because I slept well last night. My sleep score, according to my Aura ring, was 90, so feeling pretty good about life, because almost half of Americans say that they feel sleepy during the day. 35% of all adults in the U.S. report sleeping less than 7 hours per night. You now have major health and wellness influencers like Dave Asprey saying no more than 6.5 hours of sleep a night. And when people don't sleep, it is overwhelming, the number of negative effects that it has on our body. And so start us out just by talking us through how sleep deprivation derails all of your other health and wellness goals.
Oh man, it's just crazy, right? I mean, we all want to start off the year just right, right? I mean, January 1st is coming up or it's just passed and you look at these things and you're going, man, I want to get in shape. I want to get my diet better and, you know, everything needs to be better, right? And everyone almost forgets that your body needs rest. So I have clients coming to me going, okay, I was told that I might be doing some things wrong, right? They're waking up early, they're grinding all day, they're restricting their diet. And then when they go to bed, it's always late because they have so much to do and they get about 5 or 6 hours of sleep and they don't understand like what's going on. Like I can't lose this weight. I plateaued, all this stuff. And when you look at the fundamentals of sleep and what it's doing for you, you know, they still don't know the whole concept of like what it does, but we know what happens when you don't get it, you know? And basically your body just melts down. I mean, your body throws out that sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight. And basically you just have tons of things going on. Your heart rate increases. So it starts to affect blood pressure. You start noticing things like with your insulin and your hormones and all these things starting to not function as properly. So at some point, I mean, you're going to start feeling a little pre-diabetic. Metabolic disease is going to start taking over. And when you look at everything that's going on, if you allow this to continue for years, now you're looking at disease starting to take over, you know? And I just see this as a negative feedback loop that you don't want to enter. You know, bad sleep causes your leptin levels to lower, your ghrelin levels to increase. And for the people that don't know about these levels, leptin tells you you're full, stop eating. When those levels decrease, you don't know when to stop eating anymore. Ghrelin levels, well, they tell you I'm hungry. And when those are heightened during sleep deprivation, guess what? You're going to keep eating. So not only calorie consumptions are increased, but now we're looking at areas of the brain that are responsible for desire. You know, these are heightened. And what does that make you want to eat? The bad foods, right? High caloric, high sugar, anything that makes your sugar just go right up. Mm-hmm. And that's what we don't want. If we're trying to really be healthy and have this wellness lifestyle that everyone's aspiring to right now, you need sleep.
Yeah, you need sleep because, so talk us through, why do we sleep? Like what is actually happening in our bodies as we sleep? Because we've talked on this show before about if humans weren't meant to sleep, we would have stopped doing it years ago. But there is something absolutely critical to our survival as a species that we sleep. So tell us what happens when we sleep.
Yeah, I mean, I love this response because pros like Dr. Matthew Walker like to talk about this, right? And they go, you know, it's almost as if we started to evolve when we started sleeping better, right? REM sleep, including that, of course, because as we know, REM sleep is in charge of our ability to critically think, to think creatively. And some of the greatest known artists and composers have woken up in their sleep and written things down or recorded certain songs because it came to them after sleep, right? So we know REM sleep and its importance. And every time I'm asked this question, people always tell me, okay, so how do I get more REM sleep? You know, and it's like, well, it's kind of a full equation on that one. But, you know, we know our bodies in going into different stages of sleep. Now, optimally, you want to be getting at least 7.5 to 9 hours of sleep every night. Now, if you're getting less, that goes to that whole sleep deprivation. And the less you get, the higher that stress curve is getting. Anything greater than 9 hours, we have to look at quality and getting the sleep that we actually need. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, about upper respiratory resistance with snoring, sleep apnea, those types of things, right? But to bring us back into what's happening, right? Your body goes through stages. We have stage one, stage two, stage three, and four. Three and four is kind of mixed as your deep sleep. Now we're going to spend the majority of our time in stage one and stage two. And these parts are important, so don't disregard them. Later on in your sleep, you'll actually have things called sleep spindles that come into stage two that are required for movement and memory and things like that. So really helpful for athletes and things like that. But you'll go through this ballet of stages. You'll go from one all the way down to four. You'll get in your REM sleep and you'll bounce back up. Now, in this 8-hour period of sleep, you have your first 4 hours. Now, in those first 4 hours, you're going to be hitting more of your deep stage sleep, right? So your cycles of deep stage is going to be longer, and it's going to shorten as you kind of progress through the latter half of the night. Now, REM sleep, that one appears much longer on the other half of that night. So when it's a full circle and people want that REM sleep, you're going to be getting it more towards the end of your sleep. Now, people say, well, can I just, you know, go to bed at 1 o'clock and then wake up at 6 just to get REM sleep? You can. But look at your total sleep. Anything less than 7.5 hours, you're going to have stress impacting the body, and that's going to affect you long term. So the key to this to be optimal is to find your window of sleep and try to make sure that you hit that bedtime every night at the same time, mm-hmm. and your morning time every time at the same time.
It's so simple, and yet, listeners, be honest with yourself. How many of you like actually go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time? Nobody does it. You know, like, I mean, I'm sure this is even a struggle for you, because we as a culture are built to do lots of things at night that our ancestors never did, you know? And if you look at like the Chinese medicine clock, the most optimal sleep that we can get is between the hours of 9 p.m. and 11 p.m. So that's kind of like, okay, well, that means that you should probably be asleep by like 8:30 so that you get that the maximum 2-hour chunk of that most restorative sleep. But it's very, very hard. Now, I would like to go back to something you just mentioned. So you talked about sleep apnea and, you know, how, you know, so what are all the different conditions that can lead people to not sleep enough, not really get good quality sleep? What are different things that happen to people who aren't great sleepers?
Yeah, I mean, we always like to look at somebody that would get the recommended 9.5 hours of sleep, and they wake up just extremely exhausted. Mm. Now, the first question I'm going to ask is, okay, are you going to bed at the same time and waking up at the same time? If that answer is yes, and they're doing everything that they need to do, they're falling asleep and getting that 7.5 to 8 hours, and they're like, you know, I'm just one of those people that need like 12 hours of sleep. In reality, that's not really normal. You shouldn't be sleeping half your day, right? Mm-hmm. 9 hours, probably at the most, 9.5, 10, I would say, okay, on some days, right? If you're really exhausted. But there might be a quality thing, you know? So I'm asking their spouses, you know, is he a snorer? And they're like, yeah, but it's harmless. You know, he's been snoring for years. And I'm asking, well, is it really? Has he had a sleep study to determine if this is harmless? And they go, oh no, he doesn't need one of those. But when we get one, guess what happens? They're finding out that he is, in fact, stopping or having resistance in his sleep. And because of that resistance, he's not able to go to deep stage and REM sleep like he should and have that deep REM sleep or deep sleep that he needs. So I'm thinking, okay, so that's one thing, snoring. You know, don't take it lightly. And then, of course, we know the case of sleep apnea. You know, we have a lot of individuals with sleep apnea. You'll see things like hypertension that's resistant. Their blood sugars are extremely resistant, and their insulin's just not working like it should. And we also notice kidney disease, heart disease. But once they start sleeping better, getting positive airflow into their lungs, what happens? Their quality improves. And it's just, in fact, treating the insomnia with some behavioral changes that get them back on track, mm-hmm. right? So you see things like that. Now, there's other things that are going to make you real sensitive to the different changes in your body. And we know this is metabolic disease, right? Inflammation of the body, right? I mean, you look at pre-diabetes as being, oh, it's just pre-diabetes. My doctor said it's nothing. I hate that.
Yes. Oh, it makes me batty. It's like, well, why are you going to wait until things are like really nice and broken to address them? Like, why don't you fix it when it's still subtle, you know? It makes me crazy.
And like I use this analogy to all my Star Wars geeks out there. I don't know if I'm going to lose some viewers here, but he is the emperor. Pre-diabetes is the emperor. He is playing you all the way through. And then when you least expect it, now he's in front of your face and you can't get rid of him. Mm-hmm. Don't let it be that way, mm-hmm. you know? And when you're full-blown diabetic, diabetes is going to lead to so many other things. But the reason why I say quality is affected is because I oftentimes get these clients that don't even know if they're pre-diabetic or if they have metabolic issues, but I know there's some inflammation there that's sensitizing the way their body's feeling because they'll have more morning wake-ups due to sporadic cortisol shifts of maybe not eating their snacks the way they should or their dinner the way they should or eating too much carbs. And they notice this spike in cortisol waking them up at the middle of the night. Sometimes they're going to the bathroom more often and say, well, it doesn't feel like my prostate. Or women go into the bathroom and they go, well, I don't have a prostate problem like my husband. Why am I waking up? So we constantly have to look at these top three things. You know, is it quality? And then, of course, is there something metabolically going on that we can make an intervention early on to take this away so they can't sleep through the night if that's possible? Mm-hmm. But for the people out there that also have the question of, what happens if I do wake up? Should I be worried? No, of course not. You know, just waking up in the middle of the night is going to be normal for a lot of people. You know, the when you should start worrying is when you start noticing it affect you daytime or it's keeping you up for hours.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And we talked on the show with Carice Laguerre about how critical it is. So she is actually a myofascial therapist and she trains people like how to hold your face while you're sleeping because it's critical for the success of your sleep. And what you're saying is if you're snoring, then your mouth and your soft palate and your oxygenation, your trachea, all of that is off. It's out of balance and it's leading to lower quality sleep. Now, okay, so you mentioned high carb meals, and I have a feeling there's more to the nutrition piece of it. And, you know, melatonin is a really controversial supplement. A ton of people love it and swear by it, and other people are like, don't use melatonin. It's a crutch, and it's actually hijacking your brain chemistry. So, talk to us a little bit about nutrition and talk to us about supplements. So what nutrition choices can derail sleep, enhance sleep? And then what's your opinion on sleep supplements?
So let's just tackle the melatonin question because there's a lot of controversy about it. When you start out with it, you know, there is some evidence that states using melatonin in individuals that are older could be more helpful. Mainly because there's a calcification in the pineal gland that would assist in your body. But my personal opinion on melatonin is if you need it, you don't need 30 milligrams of it.
No, at all.
I had a dentist recommend that for me because he also told me it's a potent antioxidant. And I go, that is true. However, your body does not need to be desensitized to its natural form of melatonin. Mm-hmm. Our bodies can produce it very well. And I typically can have this happen with a nice power down routine and a consistent bedtime schedule. Because once that clock is ticking on the same time every day, and you're following your natural rhythm of calming down and slowing down, that melatonin is going to come up. And even if it doesn't, there's other foods that you can eat or drink before bedtime to kind of help with that production. You know, I love tart cherry juice for a reason. It's just a great little snack. And with that, you get natural forms of melatonin there. But if you have to use melatonin for any reason, it should be at the start of your sleep. 1 milligram is the most I would recommend. I don't care if you feel 3 milligrams is good. I would say at that point, we probably are getting to that crutch zone where it's just something that helps you. And that's where I feel like a lot of these manufacturers have really perfected this advertisement because there was 1 milligram, but they started doing 6, now 10, now 20, now 30. And that's just gotten out of hand with melatonin.
Well, I don't know if you've seen Dope Sick on Hulu. So it stars Michael Keaton and Rashida Jones, or is it Rosario Dawson? I think it's Rosario Dawson. And it goes through the brilliantly manipulative marketing behind OxyContin. And it follows small town doctors, it follows patients, and it also follows the sales force. And, you know, one of the things that was so dangerous with OxyContin is they started with a 10 milligram tablet, and then they made a 20, and then they made a 40, and then they made this huge campaign called Double the Dose. If your patient's still in pain, just double the dose. And so put people from 40 to 80, and 80 milligrams of OxyContin, I mean, that's enough to tranquilize a horse. And then the government had to step in because they were about to launch a 160 milligram OxyContin tablet. Just horrific. And you're exactly right. Like, we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Eaton Hemp is a farmer-owned hemp company located in upstate New York, and they focus on using all of the powerful benefits of hemp to create superfood products. They offer delicious and nutritious farm-to-table certified USDA organic hemp food products, including toasted hemp seeds and hemp hearts, and they have these amazing tasty hemp balls that are going to be your new addiction. You can add their tasty hemp products to just about anything, from smoothies, salads, or your favorite healthy recipe. Not only do they boost the flavor, but they add a punch of protein and fiber, as well as an omega-3 fatty acid boost, and are loaded with micronutrients like magnesium, zinc, and iron. They are considered to be the nature's most nutrient-dense superfood. As a special offer for our podcast listeners, you can save 25% on all Eaton Hemp products and still get a full money-back guarantee. Head over to www.eatonhemp.com/Lindsay Elmore Show to save 25% on all of your new favorite snacks. That's www.eatonhemp.com/Lindsay Elmore Show. Please be sure to shop the code provided so that Eaton Hemp knows that the show sent you to them. And now, let's get back to the show. How did we go from 1 milligram of melatonin to 30 being an acceptable dose? It, you know, it doesn't make sense.
It isn't. And there's not enough of us out there to explain that. I still have, you know, doctors saying, no, 10 milligrams should be the max. And I'm like, no, doc. I mean, we need to instill more behavioral changes before you ever think about 10 milligrams. But to go back to your initial question on the nutritional aspect, though,
yes,
you know, you have a lot of balance between your nutrients, your microchemicals, and your vitamins and everything like this, right? Poor diet can lead to a slew of deficiencies, which we often see with things like vitamin D, magnesium, calcium. Our B vitamins always take a hit. And even our omega-3s, I don't think a lot of us have a lot of food that contains these omega-3s. And don't get me started with anxiety. I mean, anxiety, you can be looking at deficiencies and other things that could cause this anxiety to worsen, which is another negative feedback loop that increases the stress, increases the anxiety, and therefore, I mean, you're really deficient. So almost immediately, I have a multivitamin for a lot of my clients. You know, I'm looking at magnesium, so we're supplementing that. And we can easily kind of take care of this by asking certain questions that would give us those symptoms of magnesium. You know, does your leg twitch at night? Do you feel, you know, certain, you know, other symptoms of like low vitamin D? Do you get outside all the time? Do you work indoors? So you're constantly asking these detailed questions to identify this. And if they haven't had a vitamin D level in years, might as well just start on stuff like that. you know, because all of this is important, not just for sleep, but to balance out the hormones that are going to allow you to not only sleep, but sleep through the night and sleep restfully, you know? So when you look at tackling things like insomnia, you're not just tackling just the nighttime, you're tackling everything, because everything in a whole is connected. You know, I can't just work on your liver and say, we just need to focus on your liver. There's a lot of other things you're doing that's also going to help the liver. And I feel like that's one thing that a lot of doctors are not doing right now, because there's just so many specialties out there for just one body part. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what do you mean? I don't go to like my hepatologist, you know, who only treats peeps that have, it's like, you know, as you were saying that, I was like, wait, do you mean to tell me that the compartmentalization of the body is the incorrect approach to this whole body system that's working? That's not even shocking to me in the least. Okay, so you mentioned a good multivitamin, magnesium, and if you're going to use melatonin, some low dose melatonin. But what are some of the mistakes people make with the foods that they're choosing around bedtime?
Oh, absolutely. So the American way is to have dessert at bedtime or dinner time or a real late snack or something that really makes you feel better, because as we know, sugar has more dopamine release than, what is it, cocaine? I don't know if that's accurate, right? But it's pretty addicting, right? So when I'm out in a restaurant, I'm not going to lie, I will order some churros and ice cream if they have it on the menu. Does it affect my sleep? Not always. But if you're constantly doing stuff like that, one of my previous clients, he was eating waffles and syrup at night, and he noticed the wake up. And he was kind of someone I felt like that had some form of metabolic issues, but never detected. Because like I said, if you're not pre-diabetic or anything, everything's fine, right? No one's going to check for inflammation.
Well, and nobody's checking insulin levels, you know, they're waiting for the A1C to start moving or the fasting blood sugar to start moving. And it's like, well, you could have checked an insulin level probably 5 years ago and seen that you were on the wrong trajectory.
Exactly. It's like this, and this is happening, but we don't diagnose it until this is happening. And you're going, well, we just wasted our time here, but let's try to turn the ship around, right? Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening, right? You eat this high sugar meal and your sugars are basically just jumping up, right? And I try to tell people, all my diabetics out there, I try to educate. You don't want things spiking your sugars, because not only are we getting this spike, but when your sugars go up to a certain amount, your body is now stressed out, okay? I just kind of say it confuses your insulin receptors, and they don't know what insulin receptors. So I'd say it makes your insulin drunk and it doesn't know how to work. Okay. You know, so as we go this route, it's also going to stay this high, and it's going to do this for however long it wants to. Mm-hmm. And this happens to everybody in varying degrees. But if you're doing a diabetic, I mean, you're asking a diabetic, I mean, this is what's happening right here, or even a pre-diabetic, anybody with metabolic issues, your body's sending out inflammation. That inflammation is messing with your insulin receptors. And then at this point, 2 to 12 to 2 o'clock in the morning, you're going to have this slew surge of insulin just taking this sugar down. And what happens when that sugar hits that bottom line? It goes lower. And when it goes low enough, what happens? Cortisol.
Yeah, cortisol. And definitely you are waking up in the middle of the night and just like, and when you have that low, yeah, exactly. That disoriented feeling of like, why am I awake? What's happening? Because when your blood sugar is that low, your brain is like, hey, you dope, we're going to die. Go eat something.
Exactly. Exactly. And a lot of us just, they go, I don't know why I woke up. I mean, I was just awake for like two and a half hours. It was frustrating. And they get into this rhythm where it started out as a small thing, but as you continue worrying about it and freaking out about it, it becomes a habit now. Okay. I know I'm going to wake up. So I'll just be frustrated. And you just have to rewire the mind. And that's why working with coaches and things like that to do so helps to just mitigate that worry, that frustration in that middle of the night. And they can also catch things before they happen. So you can slowly minimize that wake up. And therefore, you can wake up and then go back to bed 5 or 10 minutes later, mm-hmm. you know, because it's just not a big deal anymore. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a huge thing, you know, what you eat. And the same thing goes with, you know, I say starving. But if you find yourself not having a big meal or it's just a snack before, you know, at dinner time, you know, when those blood sugars go too low as well in the middle of the night, it will let you know, you know, mm-hmm. and so you just have to watch out for both.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like that all of our peeps that are listening that are doing intermittent fasting, because we've talked a lot on the show about how intermittent fasting can really heal metabolic disease, and it can be very helpful for weight loss, and it can be very helpful for, you know, reducing inflammation and cortisol in your body. But if you're waking up in the middle of the night because you're hungry from intermittent fasting, maybe your fast is too long and maybe there's something there. And so listeners, go listen to my interview with Dr. Will Cole about how do we become more intuitive about understanding when do we eat and when do we not eat. Now, you and I are both pharmacists, and there are lots and lots and lots of medications that disrupt sleep patterns, including the sleep medications. So, you know, just those Ambiens of the world. I can see on your face that you're just like, ooh, ooh. Talk to us about pharmaceutical agents that can disrupt sleep.
Yeah, I mean, let's throw that wrench out there. I mean, you look at Ambien, Zolpidem, whatever, same thing. You have your Lunesta, Sonata, your Z hypnotics. They were touted to be safer than benzodiazepines, which have just a strong addicting personality, as well as a slew of other side effects that are associated with them that make them very dangerous for people. People say over the age of 60, I'm thinking like even over the age of 40 on multiple medications, because now you're just overburdening your liver. Mm-hmm. And how are you going to get rid of all this, you know? So looking at sleep medications or things that are touted as sleep medications, you know, you're constantly looking at, okay, what is my quality like? Because I still have people waking up groggy, still exhausted. And I'm thinking, well, this is definitely not a long-term solution. And guess what? These manufacturers know that, because they say on the label, should not be used past 6 months. They understand there are significant risks down the stream. Right down the road, you're going to have issues with so many other things, whether it's mental health, whether it's related to suicide due to the hypnotic effect or the interaction of other medication, where there's the accumulation of these medications inside the body that cause other issues down the road. And then when you look at Dr. Daniel Kripke's research, his huge meta-analysis on these types of medications, he also saw an increased mortality when it comes to infections and cancer. And why would you think this has anything to do with those two things, the immune system of all things, right? And you just look at what sleep does, and sleep is constantly repairing your immune system throughout the night. But where does it start, right? So if you have a medication that is suppressing the brain activity when it should be at its most robust to allow this to trigger to the rest of your body, hey, we need to start doing all this work now that this guy's asleep, right? But when that's suppressed, do you think that work is as vivid as it should be, as strong and robust as it should be? I think not. They haven't done enough studies to prove that, but this is a theory along, experts out there like Dr. Matthew Walker, right? So I love it. And I'm thinking this is one of the biggest reasons why we need to get off of these. But there is a place for these, you know. Obviously, if someone hasn't had sleep in 6 days, some sleep is better than none. So let's just say, you know, you haven't gotten that much sleep. You always want to get something, right? You know, in traumatic events, you know, these things that you're eventually going to work through, you know, it's okay to do a sleeping pill for a short period of time if you're talking to somebody working through things, right? But we should not be dependent. We should not allow that to be our crutch. Mm-hmm. Now, sleeping pills aside, we know they're bad, right?
And those are specifically the sedative hypnotics that were just like, not so much. Because I'd also love you to touch on, I mean, there's a lot of meds that, like you think about trazodone. It was originally developed as an antidepressant, but it's a terrible antidepressant and it puts everyone to sleep. But, you know, are these just as bad?
Yeah. So, I mean, Benadryl is probably my biggest one. I mean, I have individuals.
I hate Benadryl. Oh, it just makes me crazy. If you are over 50 years old and you are listening to this podcast right now, I want you to promise me that you will never take another Benadryl in your entire life. Just the cognition problems, the falls, okay, tell me why you hate Benadryl.
I will tell you, even to go a step further, one of my previous clients was on Advil PM. Every single night. Yeah. Double. Ooh, right. You know, you look at,
you're like, your poor kidneys,
these bowels. I mean, everything is being destroyed. And then you throw Benadryl on there. So we had to get off of that. Right. I mean, that was rule number one, but at least for these first generation antihistamines, there is some data now that are showing that these also interact with the GABA receptor in the brain, causing vertebrae sedation, right? And I'm thinking here, like, okay, so does that happen to all? Because we know trazodone has a histamine blocking like effect, right? And there's others out there too. You know, you have the mirtazapines, you have tons of antipsychotics like Seroquel, olanzapine, all of these different types of medications that have this sedating effect. But as of now, like trazodone, that was like enemy number two. I was eyeballing that and I could not find anything that said it had the same GABA receptor effect, which seems to be the main receptor when it comes to sedating the brain activity. That's what Dr. Kripke was kind of, you know, flowing with. Who's to say what they're going to find years later? But now that trazodone's generic, I don't think they're trying to target it as much, but we'll see what they come up with when it comes to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if only the manufacturers of proton pump inhibitors had also put on their label, do not use for 6 months is too long for a proton pump inhibitor. 3 months is like too long for it. It's just, it's destroying people's guts.
Yeah, SIBO galore. I mean, it's just, it's a massive crisis and I don't think enough people are taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they're over the counter just means they're practically harmless, right? And that's sarcasm for me. I'm really bad with sarcasm, but man, I just, yeah, I'm
a yeah, it's well, and it's, it, you know, it's not just the gut, it's your bones and your teeth. It's just, it just goes on.
Iron.
And on.
I mean, what's a positive cation that you're consuming, right? And it's just, it's a lot of things, right?
Mm-hmm. It's so tough. So, you know, a lot of people can't sleep because they're stressed. And, you know, in the past year, one of my guests called it, we've all just become dread scrollers. You know, we scroll through Facebook, scroll through Instagram, and it's just dread after dread after dread. So how does anxiety and stress disrupt sleep?
My goodness. I mean, it's just a massive sympathetic nerve stimulator. I mean, you are, do I run or do I fight all the time? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help when it's even that low grade stimulation, right? But the amygdala is wired in a way that if we constantly stimulate it, now it's hardwired, right? Mm-hmm. So any kind of stimulation that kind of frightens you, I take the example of a mother that's frightened for her kids during a pandemic. You know, anybody that touches their kid, coughs in their direction, not wearing a mask, and you don't know better, you immediately get frightened. And it's almost as if that person sneezing in the corner 6 feet away from you is like a bear staring at you. Mm-hmm. This sensation gets hardwired. So when you hear the news or you hear anything that kind of resembles anything like that, you're now boom, pumping with adrenaline, you know? And this exhaustion could easily affect you in the middle of the night as you wake up and your kid's crying and you don't know why. You think it's COVID, you think it's this, you think it's that, right? And that just hardwires you. Now you can't go to bed. Because when you have adrenaline flowing through you, your body is not calming down anytime soon. Mm-hmm. So when you deal with somebody like this, you know, you first have to judge how well can you calm down, you know, because we all know we need to find the calm when it comes to these situations, but certain people are already past that. They're past the point where they are always stimulated. You try to tell them to meditate, not happening.
Yeah.
So we might need things like bridge therapy. We might need to look into addressing certain deficiencies that are going on. When I see somebody that has been so stressed out, I'm looking at not only the adrenals, is your thyroid okay? Is your sex hormones okay? Because there's other balancing that needs to happen before you come to see me, unfortunately.
Well, yeah. So let's talk now like about what you do, because, you know, I follow you on social media, and one of the things that I saw you post about the other day is, you know, you go and get a sleep study. The doc's going to be like, oh yeah, you have insomnia. Here, have a sleep medicine. And you were saying like, no, I'm actually going to teach you how to sleep. So how do you teach someone how to sleep? It seems like that should be so innate in us.
Oh, I know. That's why it's good to start when you're a baby and instill those habits all the way through adulthood. You know, my wife does a great job doing this with her baby clients, teaching their parents what they need to do, what the schedule looks like. And when she's talking, I'm thinking, that's almost what I'm telling them, except for don't be taking the naps, you know, in the middle of the day. So when you're looking at someone's sleep, right, there's a slew of things that they could be doing during the day, close to bedtime, during bedtime, that is disrupting their sleep, recreating these bad habits in their brain. And therefore, it's leading to this wake up, this insomnia, not able to go to bed at night. And a lot of it has to do with just the technology, like you were saying in the beginning, is that we have so many things to stimulate us. And if you're looking at going to bed, well, there's a lot of things that we can do between then. When you look at metabolic disorders, this is a little bit more tricky, but we're not only looking at the nighttime bedtime regimen, I'm looking at all throughout the day, right? Mm-hmm. So we're looking at diet. We're looking at lifestyle. We're looking at how long do you take your breaks? Are you exercising? Are you moving around? All of these things are important, not just for our sleep, but as we flow these metabolites and toxins through our bodies by moving around and taking all these breaks and doing these de-stressors throughout the day, we actually can set ourselves up just perfectly to knock out in the end of our day, right? Mm-hmm. So it's all about addressing these daytime habits. And then, of course, what to do at the middle of the night, because we always get that. Now, you can imagine, I mean, some of my sleep plans are anywhere from 15 pages to 30 pages because we address everything. So you need a coach to really break these up in phases, so we're not to be overwhelmed, right? Because if you get a 40-page, you know, list of things to do, you're going to stop. You know, you're going to say, what am I doing here? Okay, that's too much. So we break it out in small little chunks, because I like snowball wins. And when we can build that snowball, and by the end of it, they're like, I don't think I need you anymore. I did my job.
Yeah. Working yourself out of a job is the best. You know, when, for me, it's when someone can fully take ownership of their own health and wellness, and they feel like they can stand up to their doctor and say, no, this is not how I'm going to live. And they feel like that they can sleep well, eat well, exercise well, all the things. It's very important. It's amazing when you get that chance to totally work yourself out of a job. It's why we work. You know what I mean? It's why we put in the work. So you have a free downloadable that you're making available. Listeners, you can go to lindseyelmore.com/live-love-sleep. To grab a step-by-step PDF. What are they going to learn when they download that PDF?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've always incorporated into my sleep plans is, how do I relax my mind? How do I relax my body? How do I get to that mode to where I'm not so stimulated at the end of my night or when I wake up, right? And I walk patients and clients through this almost in detail. How do I get this, what we call parasympathetic nervous system, ready to go? And it all starts with our breathing. So I explain things like why it's so important to be able to breathe in and out through your nose and not through your mouth when you're sleeping. And as we go through this, you know, you're going to look at breath techniques that will allow us to not only calm down, we can also stay focused. So if you're in a difficult task and you're trying to stay focused, I go through the importance of box breathing and give you examples of how to do that. And then, of course, what happens when you're ready to get energized? You know, what kind of breathing techniques can we do to really pump some blood flow into us and get ready and get started, right? So these are all different breath techniques that I implement with my clients. And it seems to be night and day. You know, on day one, when they're waking up, they know what to do to just put them in that yawning state once again and go right back to bed.
Oh, you said yawn, and I am like about to yawn now. So
don't do it. It's contagious.
I know. It's contagious. I don't know. Why are yawns contagious in your research?
Yeah. No idea. I have not. But you know what? If I can get on TV and just yawn and make you go to sleep, I guess I've done my job, right?
Hey, there you go. Working your way out of a job all over again. Oh, listeners, head over to lindsayelmore.com/live-love-sleep to download Dr. Medina's step-by-step guide on how you can get better sleep. I love that you're teaching people both ends of the breathing techniques, because I think so often when we teach pranayama, it's all about the calming, relaxing breath. And also, I think the Ujjayi breath of just like being able to control the intake and outflow of oxygen, even as you're in a stressful, physically exerting situation, is very important. But man, you start doing some lion's breath and some, like, you know, breath that's like pumping your belly and everything, you're gonna start getting energized. That's for sure.
You're ready to go, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my motivation before the gym. It's just like, all right, I'll be right back, honey. I'm gonna do some roller coaster breathing, and I'm gonna get going. Okay.
I love it so much. Dr. Zeke Medina, thank you so much for coming in today and being a guest on The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a great night, everybody.
If you've been struggling to feel your best and feel like that food, sleep, relaxation, none of it is truly working, maybe you need to up your game with some infrared light and negative ion therapy. Infrared light penetrates deep into your body, going through your skin to muscles, nerves, and bones. Infrared light then helps to boost local circulation, bringing oxygen and anti-inflammatory molecules, as well as flushing away toxins. Therefore, infrared heat has been shown to reduce muscle pain, joint pain and stiffness, arthritic pain. It also helps to reduce stress and fatigue and supports the immune system. Negative ions act as attractors to bacteria and allergens in your environment, and they can help to inhibit free radical oxidation as well as reduce exposures to heavy metals, viruses, and other harmful elements, and can help to balance the body and the mind. The Amethyst Biomat is specifically designed to help provide infrared light as well as negative ions by electrically charging a mat full of amethyst crystals. It truly is an amazing experience to lay on a biomat. I have one as well as the tourmaline and amethyst pillow, and they have become part of my daily relaxation routine. If you want to get one of your very own amethyst biomats, head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat, and you can be on your way to relaxation and less stress and fatigue throughout your day. Head to lindsayelmore.com/biomat to shop now. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support the Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag @LindsayElmoreShow and help us bring the pod to more people.